Well, at the feast, we realize and often have sermons on the subject of being teachers in the world tomorrow. And because we know that it is starting at the millennium that we will be teachers. I was talking to Marion last night, and I brought up something about teaching, and I said, you're going to be a teacher in the world tomorrow, too. So no one's exempt. Men and women will be in the family of God, and we will be teachers, every single one of us. And it is interesting that sometimes we have to look something up. You know, the sermonette was talking about it is written, and it is certainly true that we don't know the Bible or haven't memorized the Bible, even though we may remember references when they're brought up. We can say, oh yes, I remember that. I can't remember where it's at exactly, but I remember that that's a principle and have never forgotten it. But it is interesting that when God says you are going to be a teacher, He will always back us up and give us the memory. I often think of the start of the millennium where God is going to pass us all through an IT line and we will all get a chip in our brain that's a Bible chip. And we will just have immediate access, even faster than a computer. Maybe a computer that we talk to. Now, where was that? Oh, yes. Over in dot, dot, dot. I actually think that the Bible will not be quite the same as this one right here in the sense of chapters and verses. I think there needs to be a little bit of reorganization. I don't know that we're going to back to a scroll. Maybe we will. I think people's memories will be a lot better. But by the fact that we are going to be teachers and priests, and we know, of course, we're going to live and reign with Jesus Christ for 1,000 years, and then there's going to be a plus time after that where we are teachers in the second resurrection, where we actually prepare for more people than we will have taught in the millennium time, I would suspect. Because of the billions that have never heard of God's way. So we realize that we are going to live and reign with Christ, but in Revelation 5 and verse 10, and this may have been brought up at the feast, Revelation 5 and verse 10, because it often is, it says that God has made us kings and priests to our God, and we will reign on the earth. So we are going to be on the earth. That's one of those truths that if you start thinking of what the churches in the world teach, they just don't know that we will be reigning on the earth. It's very plain, and how people can't understand it, we only know because they don't have God's Spirit. And also they say, well, I can't understand Revelation because there would be so many statements in here that would be just adversarial to their belief system. But here it says we will be kings and priests, and a priest is a teacher. When we are priests, and that is another office that we probably don't think of too much when we think of the millennium, we think maybe, well, I'll be a king or I'll be a ruler. Ruler sounds fine. Ruler sounds fine, I'll be a ruler. But when you put king to it and then priest to it, I usually really don't think of myself as a king. I don't know about you, but in the millennium, I just don't. I think of, well, I'll be there and I'll be a teacher, but I don't think of kingship. And also, I don't think of the word priest. I think of teacher, but I really don't think of priest. I probably better get over that because I've been in the church for 54 years or so, and it's about time I think that I'm going to be a king and a priest, and all of us should think that way. But when you go back to Malachi, it tells what a priest is to teach. So let's go back to Malachi. Malachi chapter 2 and verse 7. Malachi chapter 2 and verse 7. Now, this is the chapter where God starts by saying, O priests, this commandment is for you. O priests, this commandment is for you. So we will be, no doubt, remembering what it says in Malachi, because we will be those priests and we will be reminded by God, whether it's in an orientation session maybe at the beginning of the millennium. I'm not sure how all of this is going to work out, but there is going to be instruction There is going to be organization. And I like the statement, the subject is easy, but how to get it organized where everybody will understand is tough. And all I can say is to every speaker, join the crowd, because that's the way it is. I have sometimes people saying this to me, and I hate hearing it. And that is, well, sometimes I just can't understand your sermons, Mr. Sargent. You never want to hear that as a speaker. It's like, oh, no, I've got to make it much more plain. But I realize that if someone doesn't understand, they don't understand, and it's not their fault. It's my fault, because teachers are supposed to make it very plain. The whole purpose of a teacher is to make sure all his students get A's. He doesn't want any of them to get B's, C's, D's, or F's. So I know probably the higher-ups in any school would say, you gave A's to all the kids, you need to be tougher. And the answer is, no, we want them all to get A's. That should be the desire of a teacher. But anyway, going down to verse 7 then. And by the way, this is what we will want when we are teachers in the world tomorrow. We want everybody to get it, don't we? We want everybody to understand. Starting out in verse 7 then. The lips of the priest should keep knowledge. So we should keep that truth that was being talked about in the sermonette. We should keep knowledge. And people should seek the law from his mouth. For he is the messenger of the Lord of hosts. Any priest, anyone in that office is a messenger sent by God. In the millennium then, we are messengers because we will be priests. We will be speaking on behalf of God the Father, just like Jesus Christ said he did. I was going through a lesson, an old correspondence course lesson, number 34, I think it was. May have been 37, but whatever it was on faith. The whole correspondence course, the old lesson on faith. And there was a section in there on Jesus Christ not doing anything on his own, not seeking his will, and only speaking the words of his Father. There's about three or four different places where you see that Jesus Christ only spoke on behalf of his Father, and he said, my Father dwells in me. Well, basically, we're doing the same thing. We're not going to give any instruction that is not apart from what God the Father, and in this case, we are speaking on behalf directly of Jesus Christ because we are under him during the millennium. And so we will then be speaking knowledge, and people... And we are reminded of some of the feast sermons that we have. Let us go up to Jerusalem. Let us go up to Zion and seek truth. So seek the teaching from Zion. So this is what the entire world is going to be doing, looking to headquarters. Now, I've often said that sometimes we can get too localized. I can get too localized, too, in thinking about the church. We always have to look towards headquarters, because they are supposed to be giving us the guidelines. And beyond, of course, just a physical headquarters, we look to the Jerusalem above and make sure that everything we do is compliant with what we are being taught by God the Father and Jesus Christ, what's in the Bible. But we then are teaching as messengers of God. This is what we're doing. Now, when it comes to that, sometimes we have excuses that we don't have the experience, and women do not teach in church, but that doesn't mean that they won't be given a job. So you have these different excuses that we come up with whereby we think that we can't be a teacher in the world tomorrow. We like the idea of doorkeepers. I've never heard of anybody who said that they would be stressed by being a doorkeeper. That would be, to me, a very good job where you just open the door for Abraham and Isaac and Jacob. Or maybe you might make a mistake with them, so you want to open the door for maybe some lesser spirit being where you never get into any trouble. But you can think of maybe some of the thoughts that you have where you think that you will not be a teacher or that you can't teach in the world tomorrow. And when you think of those excuses or reality issues that come from this human life, I would call it. Because when we just look at what we're doing and our memory bank of the Bible and our forgetfulness, maybe as we get older, or whatever it is that we go through in this physical life, we think that we can't be a teacher. And yet we will be. So we're going to take a look at the gifts and the power and the character that is needed in the world tomorrow to be a teacher. The gifts, the power, and the character needed to be a teacher in the world tomorrow. We start with the gifts, and I'm going to just read from something that maybe I used before years ago, but I don't remember necessarily using this. When we think of gifts, I came across an article about termites. Here it says, no one can help being taken by surprise upon seeing a termite nest erected on the ground by termites. This is because the termite nests are architectural wonders that rise up as high as 5 to 6 meters. I didn't know that. 5 to 6 meters. A meter is 39 inches, so you have 6 times 40, basically. That's 240 inches. That's, that's over 6 feet if it's 6 meters, because you have to add another 18 inches or so to it. So can you imagine a nest that is 6.5 feet high? A termite nest that is that high? I would be after that like a fire engine on a fire, so to speak. Within this nest, though, are sophisticated systems to meet all the needs of termites that can never appear in sunlight because of their body structure. In the nest, there are ventilation systems, canals, larva rooms, corridors, special fungus production yards, safety exits, rooms for hot and cold weather, in brief, everything. It says when we compare the size of a termite and its nest that termites successfully overcome an architectural project by far 300 times bigger than themselves. Termites have yet another amazing characteristic. If we divide a termite nest into two in the first stages of its construction, and then reunite it after a certain while. So you divide it into, you split it up, and they're working, all these termites are working on their half. Then you reunite it after a certain time. We see that all passageways, canals, and roads intersect with each other. Isn't that something? When it's done, put them back together, and they all fit. Termites carry on with their task as if they were never separated from each other and ordained from a single place. Now, what's amazing about all of this is that termites which construct these wondrous nests are blind. So, what about our teaching in the world tomorrow? Do you think that God can take those of us who are termites? We are a creation of God. Do you think God can give us a gift? So, it's a gift. I would call it a gift. Now, we don't think of it as a gift, but it's a gift of building a structure, isn't it? And God has placed all of this, all of the details, within the termite itself, whose brains are just a little bit smaller than ours. Okay? So where do they get all of this? It's a creation of God, and it's a gift. God just gave it to them. So we'll take a look at gifts then. When it comes to the Bible, what about the gifts that God gives? We can see that God has ordained individuals right from the very beginning to carry out a task. So here we are going to be teachers in the world tomorrow. We just are. That's going to be our position. We're not going to be sent out to plow a field. That won't be our calling at all. We will be teachers. And you will love it. No, God won't be that way. Basically, I believe that after we go through an entire life that human beings in the church of God experiences, when any one who has God's Spirit dies and then comes up in the resurrection as a spirit being, I believe that we will all want to help people. We will want to give them the truth. And it will start with the law of God. It's interesting how societies go down when they forget God. There was an article by Mr. Hogberg in this last Discern. And it was interesting why there are so few babies being born in Europe. And basically the bottom line was that when they separated from God, when there's two basic situations that came along that drove them away or caused them to willingly separate from their God. And when a society becomes ungodlike, they have less children. I hadn't realized that, but that is just the statistics. They cannot maintain a culture or a society for very long. The Muslims, or the Muslims, comparatively have 5 children on the average. Erdogan, the premier president of Turkey, basically said the future of Europe is in the hands of the Muslims, because they're going to take over just by population. But it was interesting that it was because when the law of God is fled from, then society goes downhill and basically ceases to exist. So what we have then is God's ordination from the beginning that we are created to teach. We'll come up in the resurrection desirous of teaching the law of God to human beings. They don't know it. They may think they do, but as we understand, they simply don't know what the law of God is. So we have the example of Jeremiah 1 and verse 5. There's so many examples, but here we have the example of an ordination. An ordination. Jeremiah 1 and verse 5. Now, Jeremiah was ordained. He says, verse 5, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. Before you were born, I set you apart. Jeremiah 1 and verse 5. And I ordained you as a prophet to the nations. Now, we think of ordination as, well, there's going to be an ordination today. And then someone, is set apart for that job. But can you imagine an ordination when you're already in the womb? We just don't think of ordinations before we're born. But with Jeremiah, that was the way it was. Jeremiah was in the womb. He had no knowledge of existence. And God knew what he was going to do. Now, here we're going to be teachers. Jeremiah was a prophet and a teacher. Would you say God can ordain us to do that as soon as we are changed to spirit beings? And the answer is yes. Jeremiah didn't want to do it. He may have been only 17, 18 years old when God says you have to go before the nations and I'm going to put words in your mouth. Verse 6. Ah, Lord God, behold, I cannot speak. I'm a youth. And the Lord said to me, don't say I'm a youth, for you shall go to all nations whom I send to you. Actually, there is no excuse that we can give to God to tell him we can't teach. Because God just looks past anything physical. He looks past age. Not that he's going to pick on a 3-year-old and tell him to go out and teach. We're not saying that. But what we are saying is that there is nothing that gets into God's way of us not being able to do our job. Moses didn't do what God wanted him to do. He refused to do it. And then he said, well, you've got a brother. He's a good speaker. I'll have him do what I want you to do. But Moses could have done everything that Aaron did. Could have done it. He said, you will go to all the nations, all whom I send you, and whatever I command you, then you're going to speak. So to me, that's fairly easy. If you get an email from a company boss and they say, well, here, you're going to have a meeting with these individuals and you've got a command, you've got the layout of what you're supposed to give, you can get up there and you can just give it. So basically, it's not something that we have to come up with ourselves, and that's what's so nice about it. We know that whatever we're going to be given is going to be well organized. So it's going to be a subject, and it's going to be organized for us. Whatever I command you, you shall speak. So one of the big problems is edification. That's a gift also. In fact, it says that in 1 Corinthians 14, and I think it's the first or second verse. You know, if you want a gift, then seek to edify, edification, make things plain. But when it's God giving you the instruction, then it's going to be fairly simple for us. So he goes on to say, don't be afraid of their faces. I'm with you to deliver you, says the Lord. Then the Lord put forth his hand and touched his mouth. And the Lord said to me, behold, I put my words in your mouth. And that's what's so nice about when God gives us a job. I will put my words in your mouth. In fact, God says that to us in this physical life. He says, if you are called in to be a witness when people don't like you and you are brought before the kings or the judges, don't worry about it. I will put my words in your mouth. And it could be men or women. It doesn't have to be, you know, just men only. Women can speak when God puts words in their mouth, if there's a defense that has to be given. So we have that example of Jeremiah. We also see, when you go to the book of Luke, where I'm not going, but you can see that God prepared the way for John the Baptist when he was born, prepared the way for Jesus Christ. And, of course, that's not hard to understand, Jesus Christ being sent by God. So we look at the physical, and we see that God, when we're babies, will prepare us to do a job. I think a lot of us are going to be surprised to find out that we were chosen long before the time we realized or we understood the truth. He's going to say, you know, I was dealing with you before you ever thought about the truth that I gave you. Well, how long, Father? Well, before you were born, how would that be? It may be that God was dealing with many of us, maybe most of us, maybe almost all of us, before we were born. So just think of being like a Jeremiah, except not doing the biggest job. Not that Jeremiah did his biggest job then, because he'll do a bigger job in the world tomorrow, but the biggest job is being saved, for us being teachers in the world tomorrow. So we have the teaching, the gift of teaching that we will have. Let's go to Romans 12. Romans 12. Romans 12, verse 6 and 7. At this time, it says, having gifts, and what I want to point out here is what a gift is. We have a category or categories of gifts. Having then gifts differing according to the grace that is given to us, let us use them. If prophecy, then let us prophesy. That's a gift. So if someone's a prophet, it's a gift. Or ministry, let us use it in our ministering. He who teaches, in teaching. So teaching is a gift. We are going to be teaching in the world tomorrow, and if we don't have the gift right now, if we cannot put two words together according to our own thinking that makes sense, and it happens all the time in our home, by the way, where I will be, you know, as this great minister who is so clear and pure in my thoughts, and everything I say is exact and well understood, then just come into our home and listen to some of our communication. And I'm not telling you anything because, as all of you know, right? All of you know that when you talk to each other, it is not always clear. How many have never had a problem with someone understanding what you say? You've never had a problem. Now, if you're 1 year of age, 1 year of age, of course. But I don't see any hands here. There's always misunderstanding, always misunderstanding. But when God gives us as spirit beings the gift of teaching, it is going to be understood. We're not going to let anything, God is not going to let anything get in the way. It will be a gift. And some of my teachers were really good in high school and grade school. I had Mrs. Buttons in second grade, and I didn't like her, and she was a very poor teacher. Actually, she was probably better than my first grade teacher. My mother tells me that I had a really pretty first grade teacher, but I went into the second grade knowing nothing, she said. She said, I don't know what happened. You must have just stared at your pretty, you know, I don't know, first year out of college or something, but I was in the first grade. Mrs. Buttons, I didn't like. She was old, probably 40, you know, from a kid's standpoint of view. And then we moved in the middle of my second grade year, and actually we moved from Harlem, Montana. I tell people I was in Harlem, and they say, you were in Harlem? And not New York. So we moved in the middle of my second grade year, and I was so poor in school that I had to stay after school to catch up. I blame it on my teachers, but actually it was my fault. I probably wasn't listening carefully enough. And then, as all of us know, we had good teachers that we really loved, and we understood them. They made the class interesting, and at the end of it, we learned a lot. And it can be different personalities, but they just had the gift of teaching, and we all know that. Well, we will all have the gift of teaching, and whatever God gives us, we will like. It's not that we won't like it or that we have to teach it. Whatever we're going to teach, because I suspect it's going to be more than just spiritual, but everything we do will be based on spiritual. If we are a king of a city, that takes more than just teaching biblical law. It takes ruling and administering in a way that we have to teach many areas. And delegate, too. And by the way, if you're not good at delegating, start now, because we will be delegating in the world tomorrow. You have to delegate. Anyone who doesn't delegate will rarely be a millionaire. Not that we want to be a millionaire in this life, but just the principle, if we don't delegate, we're losing a lot. So we will be delegators also. But it's a gift, and we can see that not only here, but if we go to, let's say, 1 Corinthians 12 and read the gifts there, we are teachers. So we see that, and there are other scriptures, one more that I will go to, and that's Ephesians chapter 4. Ephesians chapter 4. When the church of God began, the new covenant church of God, that would be the New Testament church of God, we call it, Jesus Christ ascends to heaven. He becomes the high priest, our high priest, but he becomes the head of the church under God the Father. So verse 9, here's what it says, Ephesians 4 and verse 9. Now this, he ascended, what does it mean? But that he also first descended in the lower parts of the earth. So Jesus Christ died, was buried, was in the heart of the earth 3 days and three nights. Verse 10. He who descended is also the one who ascended far above all the heavens that he might fill all things. And he himself gave some to be apostles, prophets, evangelists, pastors, and teachers. So he's the one that decided who is going to be. He didn't look down and say, well, they have a real gift. He's the one who would have given the gift so the office could be fulfilled. I was talking to somebody who wondered about Mr. Armstrong being an apostle. And I said, well, you know, in the early church, the word apostle was not a high-ranking office. In the temple, an apostle was a messenger boy. They took a message out from the priests in the temple or others, assistant priests perhaps, and gave it to whomever. So it's not like that this is a high, grand term, at least from the start. Apostles, no doubt, in the world have thought that they were somebody, but it doesn't mean that we are somebody. We are nothing if we take a message to someone, right? So can we take a message from God to someone? And that's what we're doing. Apostles were simply those, and I don't mean to take away from the office itself, from the office and the authority in that office, because there is, but the fact is, the man is working on behalf of God. And so it says, the purpose of the gifts, so he gave gifts to all. I should go back to verse 8. He ascended on high, he led captivity captive, and gave gifts to men. Verse 8. So that's where you start seeing the gifts. And the gifts are, including, verse 11, teachers. So we will then, under Jesus Christ, have the gift of being a priest, being a teacher. And we will be kings and priests, or some say it's kingly priests, if you look at Revelation 5, where we started. Now, do we have to worry about the power needed to be a teacher? I know with me, I can be intimidated by people. I can be. I try not to be, because intimidation is wrong, being intimidated. Now, for any of us, we should not be intimidated by anyone. That's not one of the fruits of the Spirit at all, to be intimidated. What that means is someone is making you feel less than you should feel, okay, that you should feel. Now, if we are humble before God, we have the right feeling. If we are meek before God, then we're already where God wants us to be. As teachers, we won't be intimidated by anybody. In other words, there's not going to be somebody in the crowd that raises their hand and we shudder like, oh no, somebody is going to question what I'm saying about the message I am taking from God to them. So, what am I going to say? What am I going to do? You know, it's like, oh, well, there won't be that at all. First of all, we realize that we will be changed to spirit being. Now, do you think there's going to be anything that causes us not to be intimidated when we are spirit beings? Humble spirit beings, meek spirit beings, gentle spirit beings, definitely. But will we be, will anybody take away from our teaching? And the answer is, when we have all power, do you think we can deal with somebody who's obdurate, who's just in your face? And it's like, no, I think we will easily be able to take care of anybody. If they get in a wrong attitude, do you think we can take care of that attitude in a loving way? Do you think we can be strong enough, if they come up with strength and try to challenge us in anything? Do you think anybody's going to challenge you anyway? I just can't imagine a physical being challenging a spirit being. When I see what's in the Bible about just an angel, I say just. But I say an angel and just an angel because we are a little lower than the angels. A little lower. So when I read in the Bible about an angel, I see human beings trembling or falling on their knees. And I am sure that that's the way it's going to be in the world tomorrow. When they see the power, because we will emanate power. It's not that what we say is necessarily just going to be all that they see as far as power. If we are like Jesus Christ, and we will be, we read in Revelation 1 that his face shines as the sun. Now, we're going to cut back on that part of it because people will have to see us like the disciples saw Jesus Christ. And I believe that they were pretty fearful. They were pretty, I think he had their attention very well. Let's go over to that story in John 20. Because when we see the power that was given, and this is not power to misuse, by the way. I think all of us know that. We're not misusing power. We are trying to help people understand. I don't believe anybody is going to die by the hand of a spirit being in the world tomorrow, in the millennium. None of us are going to use a power in a way that's going to be harmful at all. It won't be. So no one's going to die at all. I don't think. In fact, I know that we're not going to be going to Jesus Christ and saying, you know, I lost it. I really got upset. This was a group of guys and gals that were really, you know, they were really in my face. And I just lost it, and I just, they're vapor, I'm sorry. Could you give me another city? How many of you think you would do that? Well, since we're going to have the character to teach and to be in the world tomorrow, then we're not going to do that. We will have more self-control than any teacher that they have ever seen. But in John 20, notice the emphasis as to what Jesus Christ did in appearing and disappearing before them. John 20 and verse 19. The same day at evening, this is after the resurrection, being the first day of the week, when the doors were shut where the disciples were assembled for fear of the Jews. So now what we have in the story is the doors were shut. The story did not have to be written that way. It could have been, the disciples were there, and Jesus Christ came and stood in their midst. But the emphasis is here, the doors were shut, and Jesus Christ appears in their midst. And he said to them, peace be with you. And notice the first thing he did say. You know, don't be afraid, he would have said, peace be with you. Now, when he had said this, he showed them his hands and his side. So, first off, he wanted to show them that he truly was their Messiah and their friend who had been with them, teaching them for 3.5 years. And then the disciples were glad when they saw the Lord. And then he said again, peace to you. As the Father has sent me, I also send you. I'm sending you to, guess what? To teach. And when he said that, he breathed on them and he said, receive the Holy Spirit. And they would. But then we find that Thomas was not there. And verse 26, 8 days later, when Thomas was with the group, verse 26, his disciples were again inside, and Thomas was with them this time. And Jesus came, the doors being shut, and stood in the midst and said, peace to you. This is what we carry. We carry a message of peace right from the very beginning. But the fact is, we appear and we disappear. Who is going to question that? I've often thought the first thing in the second resurrection with my mother is, and maybe I've said this before, but Greg, how did you get here and I'm not, what happened? I can't do, you know, Mom, I'm in the kingdom, you're not. Not that I'm going to say that, but she's going to see that I'm in the kingdom. She's going to see that she is not where she wanted to be in heaven. Not that anybody can visualize going to heaven. What do people in the world who are nominal Christians think in terms of their future? And they can't go too far. It's very nebulous. With us, we see that we're going to be reigning. We're going to be individuals. People will know us. We're going to be teaching. And we will be with our loved ones. In the second resurrection, if Mom has any question at all, Greg, I don't believe you. I'll just disappear. Isn't that one of the best things to do? Just disappear. Not to scare them. Bewitched. Once in a while, we'll be scrolling through the TV stations, and I think we'll, I don't know if that's the name of it, but it's a program where you have the Good Witch. And that didn't start just in the 90s. That goes way back, doesn't it, where you have the Halloween-type creatures, only they're nice. They're nice. So you have the good witches, and they will just appear. Boing, you know, and you got a sound there with the TV. And it's all fun. And maybe it's going to be more like that, you know, when you stop to think of it, appearing to people. And we're nice because back then they painted them that way. But again, it's It's not what we should be watching. But will we have their attention? Will we be able to teach? Will anybody question what we're saying? If they do, it won't last too long. The spirit that we are given with the power is 2 Timothy 1 and verse 7. Let's go there. 2 Timothy chapter 1 and verse 7. 2 Timothy 1 and verse 7. Here it says, and this is one of those memory scriptures, God has not given us a spirit of fear, but of, so we have a spirit when we're spirit beings, but even right now we are supposed to have a spirit not of fear. We are supposed to have a spirit of power and of love and of a sound mind. So we are, as physical beings, supposed to have power from God, and we need it to overcome. Marion received something from her brother not too long ago. I think it was this past week. And he was quoting someone who says, the biggest room in our life should be the room for improvement. I thought that was good. And then we talked about it a little bit, and we said, well, you know, whoever wrote that up is not ahead of God, because God says we must overcome. He who overcomes. So God is telling us the biggest thing we have to do is overcome so that we can be in the kingdom. That's the room for improvement. But when you think of the power we need, we don't think of power to hurt anybody else. We think of the power needed to overcome and grow. That's the power I need. I don't need to worry about anybody else. I can be concerned with other people, but I should be worried if I don't have the strength, the power to overcome. But that's what we are given. It's a spirit that is powerful enough to withstand Satan the devil, is what it is. And then notice a spirit of love. And that's where we will be in the world tomorrow. So it's a power that we will have in the world tomorrow, and it will be a power that is backed by a spirit of love. And then it goes on to say, of a sound mind. So with just those three items, so to speak, just those three characteristics, will that give us the confidence as spirit beings to teach? This reality is going to happen. If I die today and God has qualified me by the power of His Holy Spirit to be in the kingdom, then in an instant, I'm going to be teaching in the world tomorrow. If any of us dies today, then that's just the way it's going to be, right away. Not going to be any time frame. We die, we wake up, and Jesus Christ is there, because we know there's no thought in the grave. So we don't have to be scared of that, because if we have this mind, the mind of Christ, which is one of power and a very loving attitude and sound-mindedness, then we will be teachers in the world tomorrow. Are we better qualified than the leaders today? Would we be more qualified than the present president of the United States? Or the one who lost? All of whom are having collusions with the Russians, according to the media? And he's like, what about the Spirit of God? Is that going to qualify us, the fruits of the Spirit? So we come to character then. God will give us the gift. He'll give us the power. What about the character? And the fruits of God's Spirit counts. If we look at gentleness, kindness, in other words, if we tweet at 4 a.m. in the morning to our constituents in the world tomorrow, is it going to be a tweet that everybody likes? And the answer is, it's going to be well accepted. The media cannot pick on us, because we'll control the media, for one thing. But the point in all of this is, we are better qualified. We have more character than any on the face of this earth. You know what hit me in the sermonette also? It was very interesting. I know this wasn't the point of the sermonette, but sometimes you take from a message other things. I know I've given sermons, and people have told me they love the sermon on the subject of dot, 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 and I never had it in my mind at all that that was the subject. It's like, I didn't say anything about that subject, I don't think, but that's what they got from it. But I also picked up, and I did pick up, that you were talking about generosity, being helpful to people. No, I'm kidding. It was where Jesus Christ, it was in Matthew 4, and Satan the devil said, I have been given the power to give this to anyone that I wish. And that was rulership in the kingdom. If you will, you know, do dot, dot, dot. I have been given the power, the authority, or whatever it said there, to give this to whomsoever I wish. So all the offices in this entire world are under Satan the devil, the course of this world, the demonic organization and structure that he set up. And Satan just gives it to any demon that he wishes. And they have the power. And you can read the story in Daniel where the prince of Persia was under the power of Satan the devil, whatever a demonic angel that was. Now, the question is, since they don't have any character at all, do we have more qualifications? And the answer is, we do. We have more qualifications right then and there. Do we want any of the present world rulers to rule in the world tomorrow? And the answer is no. Would we, if we were asked, will you take dot, dot, dot's place, would any of you turn it down saying you couldn't do a better job? And the answer is no. I don't know of anybody where I would say, no, I may not have the experience, but I know there's a chip. It's called a gift. I know that God can give me a gift. And we talk about gifts of administration. We talk about gifts of, and you can go on and on with reading Romans 12 and 1 Corinthians 12. And God can give anybody a gift right away. You take two people in a family. One child has the gift to do dot, dot, dot. Maybe it's artistic ability, and the other could not put an image together with a piece of pencil and make it look like anything better than a stick. Right? Artistic ability. I remember a contest that I was in, and the person, we would get money for, I forget how much it was, back then 10 bucks was a lot, but you send this in, and the person who could send the best drawing in of whatever it was would win. Well, I got mine back, and they said, oh, you copied this. And I didn't copy it. What I did was took a ruler, and I measured everything and put dots, and then I connected the dots based on the measurement. I thought, and I wasn't breaking the rules, I don't think. Maybe in spirit I was, but I was sending this picture, and they thought I copied it. But that's the best I could do. Otherwise, it would have looked like a stick. So the point is, some people have artistic ability as a gift. A brother or a sister in the same family doesn't have any of that. Well, God is going to give us the gift. And if we have the character, we don't have to worry about the gift. And it won't be anything necessarily that we're doing in this life. What do we have to have the character of? Well, we see that Exodus 18. It's interesting when you go through Exodus, and this is the last point, by the way, as you know. Exodus 18, and it is getting hot in this room. I think the heat is just going up. Do you feel it hotter out there? So that's another thing that in my part of the kingdom, suits and ties are out the window. We will not have suits and ties. Although as a spirit being, we don't need to worry about it, but having concern for the citizens under the kingdom of God, I think we will change the style a little bit. Some people say, oh, the 1890s were so modest, but the women were dressed up in all of these clothes. You see these TV programs on BBC at least, and it's 100 degrees, and women have their hats on, and they have clothes up to here, and they have stockings on, and probably 5-6 layers below their waist, and it's like that was just Satan's way. Just Satan's way. So that's not going to be either. Exodus chapter 18. Exodus 18 and verse 21. Here Moses is chosen, is told to pick out individuals that will be rulers. In verse 21, getting right to the verse, moreover, you shall select from all the people able men such as fear God. Now, the abilities will be given to us by God, abilities as far as the way to do things. But first of all, the fear of God. Now, that has to do with God's government. So we fear in a proper way the government of God. We fear God. And we fear in a right way not obeying God. And we fear not being able to serve under anyone he sends. We want to be able to follow the messenger. So government is involved in this. In other words, Moses isn't going to choose someone that isn't going to follow his instructions. They have to follow his instructions. That's just the way it is going to be. And Moses is not going to sin. Every child wonders about parents who administrate certain rules in the house. And to kids, if it's not sin, you got to do it. If it's not sin, you do it. And for employees, an employer gives instruction, and if it's not sin, we do it as much as we can. Now, we can always quit the job. Children, you can't quit home too early. You know, you can't do that. You have to wait till you're 30. It's 26 that has the reasoning ability, isn't it? Where they say 24, 25, 26, where kids come into, we all have come where the brain is really functioning much better than when we were teenagers or even early in our 20s. But it's somewhere, maybe for gals, it's 24 and guys 26 or something like that. But there's an age where really we should be making decisions more on our own where we can, I suppose. And I won't get into that subject because it's probably a class in itself that I'm not going to teach. But notice, men of truth, hating covetousness. So if I fear God, I'm a man of truth. Okay, truth, and that's where the sermonette came in today. Men of truth, hating covetousness. Those three things are so important. That's character. Those things are character. And then when we see the character that we have here as far as teaching and being over a city or two, notice what it says in Proverbs 16 and verse 32. Proverbs 16 and verse 32 is one of my favorite scriptures, one that's very easy to remember because 2 times 16 is 32. So it's one of those. It's like 2 times 11 is 22, and that's where you find information about Abraham, Genesis 22, being the father of the faithful. So you have Hebrews 11, which is the faith chapter, and then double that, go back to Genesis, and you can remember that until you're 75. I've got 2 more years to keep that in mind. But notice verse 32, very, very important when it comes to any question that we might have as to whether we will be able to function under the government of God and teach. He who is slow to anger is better than the mighty. And he who rules his spirit than he who takes the city. We are going to have cities. And if we can rule our spirit, that is better than the mighty. So we're better than taking a city, we're better than present rulers in a city, and we're better than the mighty if we have this self-control. It's one of the fruits of God's Spirit. If we have self-control, we are ready to teach. Very important. And then, he who's faithful in little is faithful in much. God is not going to give us, you know, millions of dollars to see whether we can take care of whatever, you know, the amount of money he gives us. He's giving us little things. Don't deny the day of small things, I think God told, what was it, in the book of Zechariah? If it's a little thing and we have a responsibility and we do it well, God is going to take a look at that and he's going to give us something bigger. There are so many employees, as you know, who do not do their job. Our daughter was telling us about some of the coworkers with whom she works, and she says when the boss walks away, they say, "We're not going to do what he says." Little things. It's not a big job that they have to do. It's little things. But on the other hand, there are people who start sweeping in a company and they become the CEO or the president because they were so responsible in little things. That's what God is doing looking at us. He's looking at whether we are responsible in little things, just little things. And that's what he looks at. So he looks at the character. He's going to give us the power. He's going to give us the gifts. We're responsible for overcoming and growing in grace and in knowledge. The knowledge of the Bible, of course, the knowledge of the truth. In grace, that means the Spirit of God, using the Spirit of God to do whatever we need to do, using our gifts from God's Spirit. And mostly, when I think of God's Spirit, I think of the character that goes with it. Finally, let's go to Matthew 28. Matthew 28. Here we find what's going to happen when Jesus Christ returns to the earth. We actually have a statement by Jesus Christ that tells us what he's going to tell us at the start of the millennium. Maybe you didn't realize that that's there, but here it is, Matthew 28, starting out in verse 18. All authority, Matthew 28, verse 18, all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth. Now, that was true in 31 A.D., but can you imagine how much more true that is, if you can say it that way, when Christ appears on this earth, descends back to this earth to take over under the Father the rulership of this world for an entire 1,000 years. He will say, "Look, gang," or "Look, brethren," or "Look, you know, brothers and sisters," or whatever he's going to say, "all authority has been given to me in heaven and on earth." And then in verse 19, "Go and make disciples of all the nations." And it will be everybody then. It's not going to be just some who are afar off that God will call. I'm talking about Acts 2:38 when he says, "You, your children," you know, the verse that we went through last week, "and to those who are far off." This is to everybody. It literally will be every single person on the face of the earth. Go, make disciples. That means students for me, for Jesus Christ. Make disciples of all nations and baptize them in the name of the Father and the Son and of the Holy Spirit, and teach them to observe all things that I've commanded you. These three verses will apply more at that time than they even do now. Not in as far as the numbers we're going to teach, let's put it that way. So we have our job cut out for you. When we're given that commission, we're going to follow it. There'll be no question. We'll have no problems with it. We'll want to do it, and we'll be ready to do it. So I hope all of us are growing in character so that we can fulfill the role of being a king, a priest, a teacher in the world tomorrow.